I have absolutely no idea.
When did she give it to you?
For my birthday last year, so about 18 months ago.
I wasn't sure what the hell was going on, but I knew Evelyn and Lexi didn't speak anymore. I remembered a day a couple of years ago when I'd gone to pick up Charlie, and my ex-wife had been in a particularly bitchy mood. She'd asked me if I kept in touch with Evelyn. Of course I didn't. Evelyn was my sister's friend and not one I was too fond of to begin with.
I just read the first page. It starts on the day we met.
Stella looked pale.
I know.
I rubbed the back of my neck, feeling something between bamboozled and angry, but I tried to stay calm.
You just happened to receive my ex-wife's diary from the women you were pretending to be the night we met?
It sounds far-fetched, I realize that. But yes, that's what happened. I had no idea it belonged to your ex-wife until the other night.
The other night? At my house when you said you had a headache and bolted? She nodded.
That's when it all clicked together.
I'd gone over that evening in my head a dozen times, trying to figure out what the hell had happened. One minute we were fine and laughing, and the next she was out the door. I shook my head.
I don't understand, Stella.
She sighed.
Do you think we could sit down to talk about this?
I dragged a hand through my hair. You sit. I need to stand. Hesitantly, she walked over to the chair and sat down. I started to pace in the living room.
What happened the other night at my house?
Stella looked down and spoke to her hands.
Charlie said her full name, and I remembered it from a diary I'd read a while ago. Do you recall I told you I'd read the diary of a woman who got married at the library? That I used to go sit on the stairs and look for the people I'd read about?
I was so confused. You were looking for me and Lexi?
Stella nodded.
I didn't know it at the time, but yeah, I guess I was.
It seemed incredulous that my ex-wife's diary could fall into my new girlfriend's hands by coincidence. But even if that's exactly what had happened, I still didn't get why Stella got so freaked out the other day. I held up the diary.
So this is why you've been avoiding me? Because you realized you'd read my ex-wife's diary?
She continued to avoid my eyes.
Yes.
I paced a few times, trying to see the full puzzle, but I was missing a few pieces.
Why?
If this was all some big coincidence, why not just tell me?
Stella was quiet for a long time. This was freaking me out.
Answer me, Stella. She looked up for the first time. Her eyes were filled with tears, and she looked completely distraught. I felt torn between wanting to hold her and wanting to scream at her for whatever the fuck craziness she had going on. Unfortunately, the latter won out, and I barked, "God damn it, Stella, answer me!"
She jumped in her seat, and tears streamed down her cheeks.
"Because there are things in the diary entries."
"What things?"
Lexi and I didn't have a great relationship, especially at the end. But I wasn't ever cruel to her. I hadn't given her anything to write about that would freak Stella out. Stella started to cry harder.
"I don't want to hurt you."
I couldn't take seeing her upset, so I walked over and kneeled in front of her. Pushing strands of wet hair from her face, I spoke quietly.
"Relax. Stop crying. Nothing Lexi could have written in some diary is going to hurt me. This hurts me, seeing you so upset. What's going on, sweetheart?"
Trying to calm her only seemed to trouble her more. She sobbed, her shoulders heaving. So I pulled her in for a hug and held her until she calmed down a little. Once she did, I tilted her chin up so our eyes met.
"Talk to me. What has you this upset?"
Her eyes jumped back and forth between mine, and it felt like I was watching her damn heart break.
"Lexi," she sniffled. "She talks about having an affair."
I blinked a few times.
"All right.
Well, I didn't know she had an affair. But I guess I can't say I'm shocked." I caught her in lies about meaningless things over the years, and at one point I had suspected she might be seeing someone, although she always denied it. Lexi's pretty selfish and did some shady shit, including hiding money and disappearing until late at night. Is that what's been eating at you? You thought I'd be upset to find that out? It's not pleasant to hear, but that part of my life is over. Stella closed her eyes and shook her head.
There's more.
Okay, what? What is it?
The man she was sleeping with? She wrote that he was your best friend.
My face wrinkled. Jack?
She never says his name, but she refers to him with the letter J. And...
Stella swallowed once more and took a deep breath.
Lexi doesn't know who the father is.
I had to be in some serious denial because I had no idea what the hell she was talking about. Father of who? What do you mean? Stella's lip trembled.
Charlie. She doesn't know who Charlie's father is. She was sleeping with both of you at the time she was conceived.
Until a week ago, I'd felt like I had the world by the balls. I remember watching my little girl cook me dinner with the woman I was crazy about, the two of them laughing and smiling, and thinking how right everything finally felt after so long. And now, it felt like the world had me by the balls. At first, I didn't believe it. Not that Lexi wasn't capable of doing that type of shit, but I couldn't believe my best friend was. At a very minimum, that part had to be wrong. Jay could stand for 1,000 names. There was no way Jack would do that to me. But when I was on my third scotch, sitting at a bar where I'd met my buddy countless times, I remembered a particular Valentine's Day years ago. I'd been up in Boston on business for a few days. My flight home had been scheduled for the evening. I'd told Lexi I'd take her out to dinner when I got home, but I'd finished up early and decided to take a midday flight and surprise her. When I walked in, Jack had been in our apartment. I remember having a fleeting, uneasy feeling, but then Jack had said he'd asked Lexi to go shopping with him to buy his new girlfriend, now his wife, a gift for Valentine's Day. He'd said she loved emeralds and remembered Lexi had a necklace with one, so he'd figured she would be able to help him pick out a quality stone for a ring. I'd honestly thought nothing more about it. This was my wife and my best friend, for fuck's sake. A few years later, I'd sat across from Lexi in my attorney's office. She had her hands folded on the conference room table, and I noticed an enormous emerald sparkling on her finger. Our negotiations had gotten contentious by that point, so I'd made a comment about her ridiculous spending and motioned to the ring. She'd flashed a wicked smile and said she'd had it for years, a gift from a man who actually appreciated her. I'd never seen the ring before, but Lexi had a shitload of jewelry, so again, I chalked it up to nothing, and my ex just trying to get under my skin. Rattling the ice cubes that had barely had a chance to melt in my glass, I decided to make a call. I didn't give a fuck if it was 2:30 in the morning. A groggy woman's voice answered on the third ring.
Hello?
Do you have an emerald ring?
Hudson, is that you?
I heard a man's voice grumble in the background, but couldn't make out what he'd said. Yeah, it's Hudson, Alana.
It's the middle of the night.
Can you just tell me if you have an emerald ring?
I don't understand.
My voice boomed. Just fucking answer the question. Do you or do you not have an emerald ring from your husband?
No, I don't. But what's going on, Hudson? Is everything okay?
Alana must have covered the phone because I heard muffled voices, and then a few seconds later, my supposed best friend came on the line. Hudson, what the hell is going on? Your wife doesn't have a fucking emerald ring.
Are you drunk?
I ignored him. Whether I was drunk or not didn't change the facts. You know who does have a fucking emerald ring?
What are you talking about?
My ex-wife. That's who has the fucking emerald ring, the one you told me you went shopping to get for your new girlfriend when I came home from Boston early. The line went quiet for a moment. Eventually, Jack cleared his throat.
Where are you?
The bar down the block from your house? Get your scrawny ass down here, or I'll be at your apartment in 10 minutes. Without waiting for a response, I hung up and tossed my phone on the bar. Then I held up my empty glass to the bartender. I'll take another. Jack said nothing as he settled himself on the stool next to me. I couldn't even look at him. My voice was eerily calm as I stared down into my glass.
How could you?
He didn't immediately respond. For a moment, I thought he was going to try to play dumb, or worse, deny it, but at least he gave me that much respect.
I wish I had an answer to that question, he said, other than I'm a fucking piece of shit.
I scoffed and brought my drink to my lips.
Probably the first honest thing I've heard out of your mouth in years.
Jack raised his hand for the bartender and ordered a double scotch. We waited until his glass was filled to continue.
How long? I asked.
He sucked back half of his glass and set it down on the bar.
About a year.
Were you in love with her, at least? Jack shook his head.
No, it was just sex.
Great, I sneered. 25 years of friendship, just for sex. Lexi didn't even give a good blowjob. She was all fucking teeth. Through my peripheral vision, I saw Jack hang his head. He shook it for a long time.
I think I wanted to win at something, he said. You were always smarter, stronger, taller, more popular, and got all the girls you could handle. After we were dating for a few weeks, Alana admitted that the night we met her in that bar, she and her friend had walked over to talk to us after she'd called dibs on you. Even my wife would have picked you over me if she'd had the choice.
He shook his head again.
We were drunk the first time it happened, if it's any consolation.
It's not. We sat side by side for a solid 10 minutes without either of us saying another word. I finished off my fourth scotch while my loyal friend sucked back his double. I wasn't a big drinker, so the alcohol had really hit me. My vision was blurry, and I felt the room starting to spin. Taking a deep breath, I turned to face Jack for the first time. He did the same, meeting my eyes as he blew out a jagged exhale.
Is she yours?
Just asking the question caused a physical ache in my chest, and my voice cracked when I spoke again.
Is my daughter yours?
Jack swallowed.
Lexi was never sure. As far as I know, she still isn't.
I pulled out my billfold. Tossing 200s on the bar, I raised my hand to call the bartender. 100 for the drinks, the other 100 is to not help him up. The bartender looked confused, so as I stood and steadied myself, I pointed to the piece of shit man I'd called my best friend for more than 2 decades.
He was fucking my wife while I was married to her.
The bartender's brows shot up, and he looked between us.
Turn around,
I muttered at my oldest friend. Jack turned in his seat to face me. I had to close one of my eyes to only see one of them, but he never raised his hands as I hauled back and landed a punch square in the center of his face. It was the least he could have done, taking it like a man. You don't tell my piece of shit ex-wife that I know, I warned before turning toward the door. I never bothered to look back to see if the bartender helped him off the floor.
Chapter 32. Almost a week had passed, and I still hadn't seen Hudson, though I supposed he was more entitled to disappear than I'd been when I was avoiding him. I suspected he'd told his sister something, as Olivia had never once mentioned his name. The last of the signature scent samples came in. The artwork we'd shot in California for the boxes had been approved, and today, Thursday, the warehouse had started shipping the orders that had come in from the home shopping channel. It was a monumental day. The dream I'd had for years had come true. yet I wanted nothing more than to go home and climb into bed. But Fisher wouldn't let the occasion go uncelebrated, no matter how many times I told him I wasn't in the mood. So I wound up meeting him for dinner after I left the warehouse. He was already seated in a booth when I arrived, an ice bucket set up next to the table. I slid into the seat across from him. All right, now I know things are bad. I just watched you come in. The hostess has a giant vase of flowers on her podium, and you didn't even try to smell them. I attempted to smile. It doesn't feel like I should be smelling the flowers today. That's where you're wrong. Today is precisely the day you should be stopping to smell the flowers, my Stella Bella. You put your heart into this business, and today your first order started shipping. He lifted the bottle out of the ice bucket and filled an empty glass in front of me before filling his own. I even sprung for the good stuff. While he of course meant well, seeing the gold label on the bottle of champagne, the label that had been on the bubbly we'd swiped from Olivia's wedding months ago, just felt like coming full circle. And the circle was now closed. Hudson and I had started and ended with these bottles. A heavy feeling settled in my chest. Fisher lifted his glass in a toast. To my smarty pants girl. You worked through the rain for years and finally got your rainbow. I smiled. Thank you, Fisher. The waiter came and took our orders. I wasn't in the mood to eat, but I felt like I had to give it my best effort because Fisher was trying so hard. So I guess you haven't heard from Hudson? I sighed as my shoulders wilted. He hasn't been in the office. I get business emails sometimes, but those always come really early in the morning, like 4 a.m. He's still working, but from home, and he's not speaking to me on a personal level. Fisher sipped his champagne. So you don't even know if he's confronted his ex-wife? Told her he knows about the diary and everything in it? I shook my head. He took the book when he left, but I have no idea what he's done with it or who he's spoken to. He can't hold this against you forever. None of it is your fault. I'm not even sure he believes me that it's a coincidence I had the book. How could it not be a coincidence? Think about it. I just happened to show up at his sister's wedding, a woman I'd never met before, after reading his ex-wife's diary? But you didn't know it was his ex-wife. I shrugged. I know, but it seems awfully convenient. So what does he think? You stalked him or something? You read his ex-wife's diary, somehow figured out who he is, and set out to make him fall in love with you? That's one boiling bunny short of a Glenn Close movie. I shook my head. I don't know what he thinks. Well, you want to know what I think? Do I have a choice? Of course not, silly girl. Fisher reached across the table, took my hand, and squeezed. I don't think any of the things that happened are coincidence. I think life is a series of stepping stones that branch out in all different directions. We have no idea what path we're supposed to follow, so we tend to walk a straight line and follow the biggest stones, because that's the easiest thing to do. Coincidences are the smaller stones that lead you on a path that veers off. If you're brave enough, you follow those stones, and you wind up exactly where you're supposed to be. I smiled sadly. That's beautiful. When did you become so enlightened? About 10 minutes ago, when I was seated at this table and the waiter walked over. The hostess had asked me if I wanted a high table or a booth. I said a high table, but she walked me over to this booth anyway. I could have told her it wasn't what I'd requested, but instead, I followed one of the little stones down a new path, and look what it brought me. My forehead wrinkled. I'm lost. What did it bring you? Our waiter approached, carrying a tray with our appetizer. He set the dish in the middle of the table and flashed a dazzling smile at Fisher. Can I get you anything else? Not at the moment, but maybe later. The waiter's eyes sparkled. You got it. After he walked away, Fisher picked up a mozzarella stick and winked at me. Him. That path brought me him. And I think that's exactly where I'm supposed to be in a few hours. On Friday night, I left the office about 7. Signature Scent was shipping without a hitch, and next week the website would go live for orders from the public. Olivia had managed to get me time on some local morning news shows for various segments that featured women in business, and a few magazines had agreed to do interviews with me. Everything I'd dreamed about for so long was coming true, yet I couldn't find it in me to enjoy it. This morning I'd broken down and texted Hudson, "I miss you." I could see he'd read it, but no return message ever came. I was heartbroken. Once, when I was a kid, I'd been jumping waves at the beach and one had hit me hard. It sucked me under, and I'd tumbled around like a rag doll, losing sight of which way was up. That's how I'd felt this week without speaking to Hudson. I'd had to drag my ass out of bed to come to work. Now it was the weekend, but for some reason I wasn't ready to go home. On the train, I just sort of zoned out as it headed uptown. At one point, I happened to look up as we were pulling into a station, and the name of the stop painted on the wall caught my attention as we slowed. Bryant Park, 42nd Street. I stood. The train was packed, so I pushed my way through a dozen people to get to the doors and step off. The New York Public Library was right around the corner. The last thing I should be doing was sitting on the steps, reminiscing about the night Hudson and I had first danced. Yet I couldn't have stopped myself from going if I'd tried. It was fall, so the days were getting shorter, and not long after I sat down in the same spot I'd sat in 100 times before, the sun started to set. The sky lit up in a purpley orange, and I took a deep breath and closed my eyes for a minute, trying to let nature's beauty lift my spirit. When I opened them, my gaze cast down the steps and snagged on a man stopped at the bottom, staring up at me. I blinked a few times, assuming my imagination was playing tricks on me. But it wasn't. My heart seemed to skip every other beat as Hudson climbed the steps to where I sat. "Mind if I sit with you?" His face was unreadable. "No, of course not." Hudson settled in next to me on the marble step, his legs spread wide, and he clasped his hands between his knees and stared down for the longest time. It gave me a chance to look at him. Only a week or so had passed since I'd last seen him, yet I could tell he'd lost some weight. His face looked drawn. He had dark circles ringing his eyes, and his skin, normally tan and bright, looked sallow and dull. So many questions ran through my head. Had he come looking for me? Or had he come to do his own thinking? Was he okay? What had transpired over the last week? Based on Hudson's face, it looked like things had taken a turn for the worse. But it also seemed like he had something to say, and whatever it wasn't easy. So I fished inside my purse for the Hershey bar and offered it to him. He smiled sadly. "You look like you could use it as much as I could. Want to share?" For the next 10 minutes, we sat next to each other in silence on the steps of the New York Public Library. The place he'd gotten married. The place we'd met. The place his parents, whose relationship he revered so much, had also said their vows, and shared a chocolate bar while watching the sunset. Eventually, he cleared his throat. "You okay?" "I've been better. How about you?" He smiled sadly. "Same." Again, we were quiet for long moments. "I'm sorry I disappeared for a while," he finally said. "I needed some time to figure things out." I shifted and turned to face him, though he continued to stare forward and not look at me while I spoke. "Did you?" I asked. "Figure things out, I mean?" He shrugged. "As much as I can, I guess." I nodded. Hudson stared out at the sunset while tears pooled in his eyes. He swallowed before he spoke. "Jack admitted it." My heart ached. I had no idea what we were to each other anymore, but that didn't stop me from offering compassion. I clasped my hand with his and held it tight. "I'm sorry, Hudson. I'm so, so sorry." "I decided not to speak to Lexi about it." "Wow. I would have thought that was the first place he'd go." "Okay. The only thing letting her know would accomplish is giving me the satisfaction of screaming at her. It wouldn't do me any good. Nor Charlie. My head isn't screwed on straight enough to deal with things. As far as I'm concerned, Lexi is the enemy, and it's never a good idea to let the enemy know your plans. I need to know exactly where I stand, and if need be, what my rights are before dealing with her. Hudson swallowed again. His voice was hoarse when he continued. Charlie is my daughter. That's not going to change if... He couldn't even say the words. Tears filled my eyes. You're absolutely right. And you're an amazing father. An amazing man for putting Charlie's feelings first at a time when it would have been really easy to be irrational. I did get our DNA tested, though. I swabbed her cheek while she was sleeping and dropped it off at the lab yesterday, along with a sample of my own. I don't really want to know the results, but I feel like it would be irresponsible not to. God forbid something happens and she needs blood or something. He paused, and this time he failed at holding back his emotions. His voice broke. I'll know in about a week. He hadn't given me any indication that things between us were okay, but that didn't matter. Hudson was a broken man, and I couldn't just sit here and watch him fall apart. I wrapped my arms around him. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry you're going through this, Hudson. His shoulders shook as I held him. He made no sound, but I knew he was crying because I felt the wetness on my neck where his face was buried. I thought he might feel better if he got it out. Crying is a physical release of pain. But I also knew the type of man Hudson was. He would keep some of it in to torture himself, because deep down, he probably felt like it was partly his fault. He would blame himself for working too much and not giving his wife enough attention, or not bringing home flowers for no reason. It was misplaced guilt, of course, but he was such an honorable man, I was certain he wouldn't see it that way. Eventually, Hudson pulled back. He looked straight into my eyes for the first time. I'm sorry, I needed some time apart. I shook my head. There's no reason to be sorry. I understand. I hid from you for a while there as well. Just please know I never meant to keep any of it from you. I truly didn't make the connection until that night at your apartment. And then, I didn't know how to tell you. I didn't want to. I know that now. It was just a lot of coincidences to take in at once. I needed some time to absorb everything. And then to realize none of this was a coincidence at all. I pulled back. What do you mean? Hudson pushed a lock of hair from my face. Why are you here right now?
You mean at the library?
He nodded.
I don't know.
I shook my head. I was on my way home from work on the train, and I looked up and saw this stop. Something just compelled me to get off.
You know why I'm here.
Why?
I was also on the train, but heading uptown to your apartment. I glanced up for a half second, and through the sea of people packed into the subway car during rush hour, I saw you getting off at Bryant Park. My train had stopped on the track directly across from yours. I tried to get off, but we started moving before I could make it. So I got off at the next stop and ran all the way back here.
My eyes widened. You just happened to look up and see me getting off a train that I just happened to randomly get off when it wasn't even my stop?
If I wasn't sure what was going on before, I am now.
He cupped my cheeks and met my gaze.
None of this is a coincidence, sweetheart. It's the universe conspiring for us to be together. It has been from the very start, before we even met.
Tears rushed to my eyes all over again. The hollowness I'd felt in my chest over the last week began to fill with hope. I thought about how much we'd both been hurt. Hudson, of course, far worse than me. That damn diary had been at the root of it all, but he was right. It was more than just a series of coincidences. There'd been a higher power working for us all along. I smiled and leaned in to brush my nose against his.
You know, I think we should probably give in. We don't stand a chance if the whole world is conspiring. Sweetheart, I didn't stand a chance from the moment I looked at you.
Chapter 33. The last week had been grueling. Though yesterday morning had been the worst. I was due to get my DNA results at 9 a.m., but the lab was running late. Stella had stuck around to be with me when I found out, but she'd had a lunch meeting with a vendor she couldn't miss, which had turned out to be for the best, because I cried like a damn baby when they finally called around noon and confirmed that my little girl wasn't actually mine. By the time Stella came over in the evening, I was numb and piss drunk. I'd passed out by 9 o'clock, which was probably why I'd been awake since 3 a.m. now, staring up at the ceiling. How the hell was I going to look into Charlie's eyes knowing she wasn't mine? I'd feel like a fucking fraud lying to her. She was only 6, but I was always honest with her. I wanted her to trust my word like I had my father's. And now that was all ruined. I kept thinking about a conversation we'd had a few months ago. She'd told me she hadn't broken the handle off of a kitchen cabinet, one I'd often caught her using as a step stool to reach the counter. Because of the way the screw was bent, I knew she'd been lying to me. So I sat her down and explained that no matter how bad a situation was, lying about it was always worse than whatever you were trying to cover up. That night, she'd come to me with the truth and told me her stomach hurt. I was pretty sure guilt had twisted her little belly into a knot. I was about to have a gaping ulcer from the lie I would be covering up. About 6 a.m., the sun started to stream in through the bedroom window. A ray of sunlight cut a thin line across Stella's beautiful face, and I turned on my side to watch her sleep. She looked so peaceful, which gave me some comfort since I knew the last few weeks had been as stressful for her as they had for me. I couldn't imagine how she'd felt the moment she put the crazy puzzle together. It must have been a lot like I felt right now, as if the bottom had dropped out of my world and I no longer had footing to stand on. As if she sensed me watching her, her eyes fluttered open. "What are you doing?" she asked groggily. "Enjoying the view. Go back to sleep." Her lips curved in a sleepy smile.
"How long have you been up?"
"Not too long." She grinned.
"Hours then, huh?"
I chuckled. The difficulty with soulmates was that when you shared a bond unlike anything you'd experienced with another human, they were pretty good at calling bullshit when you tried to hide your heartache. I brushed a lock of hair from her face. "I don't know what I would have done without you this last week."
"Without me, you wouldn't have had the worst week of your life."
I shook my head. "It would have come out someday. You can run from lies, but the truth always catches up to you." She sighed.
"I guess.
I think I've decided how I'm going to handle things with my ex-wife."
"You have?"
I nodded. "I think it's best that I continue not to say anything to Lexi."
"Oh, wow. Okay. How did you come to that decision?"
"The most important thing is that Charlie not be hurt. I'm the only father she's ever known, and right now she's too young to deal with finding out everything in her life is a lie. She needs stability, routine, and predictability. Not for me to upend things just to ruin my ex-wife. Lexi wants child support and alimony from me. Jack does well these days, but he can't afford the cushy life I foot the bill for, trust me. So I think it's best she thinks she's keeping some big secret. If she knew I knew, she'd feel financially threatened, and I wouldn't put it past her to be spiteful and tell a 6-year-old her father isn't really her father." I rubbed Stella's arm. I texted Jack earlier to let him know because it felt like the right thing to do. He said biology doesn't make a family and she's mine. He doesn't sound interested in trying to push into Charlie's life. I despise the guy, but he's right. Charlie's my daughter, no matter what the biology says. Not having my DNA doesn't change that. Someday when she's older and ready, I started to get choked up. I'll tell her she's not mine. Stella smiled sadly.
"I think that makes a lot of sense. Though I can't imagine it will be easy for you to deal with your ex-wife, knowing what you know."
I shook my head.
Definitely not. But it's fine. I'll do whatever is best for my daughter. For Charlie. Stella reached out and cupped my cheek. Don't correct yourself when you say my daughter. You are Charlie's parent. Because a parent is someone who puts the child's needs before their own, and I'm pretty sure you're the only one of the three adults in this equation who has always done that.
I nodded. Stella stroked my arm quietly for a few minutes. We laid on our sides facing each other, and my hand rested on the bed between us. Though when she attempted to weave her fingers with mine, I realized my hand hadn't actually been resting on the bed. It was balled into a fist. She pried my fingers loose.
You're so tense.
Yeah, I should probably go for a run to burn off some of the tension.
Do you have to be anywhere today or do anything?
I shook my head. I'm not planning on going to the office for my usual half day on Saturday. She lifted my hand and brought it to her lips.
You know, I can think of a much more pleasant way for you to burn off some steam than pounding the pavement.
Even with the sleepless night and the conversation we'd just had, the feel of Stella's lips on my hand and the mention of pounding already had my mood changing for the better.
Oh yeah, what did you have in mind?
She gently nudged me to roll to my back and climbed on top of me. Straddling my hips, she lifted the t-shirt she'd worn to bed up and over her head. Her full breasts had the best natural lilt. When I sat up to reach for them, Stella held up her pointer finger and wagged it back and forth.
Nope. This is your stress relief. Just lie back and let me do all the work.
I folded my arms behind my head, assuming she meant she was going to be on top. But instead, she shimmied back and sat on my thighs. Her little hand pulled my cock out of my sweatpants, and her fingers wrapped tightly around it. She gave it a firm squeeze and licked her lips, then bent at the waist and slid her tongue across my crown. Her eyes glinted devilishly as she licked the bit of pre-cum from my tip and looked up at me.
Show me. Show me how you want me to suck you.
I groaned and slid my fingers into her hair. Stella's eyes closed. She lowered her jaw and took almost my full length into her mouth in one smooth motion.
Fuck.
So much better than running. This was going to be embarrassingly fast, but so fucking needed. As if sensing exactly what it would take, Stella went to work. My entire shaft was soon soaked with her saliva, the kind of wet that every time she bobbed down and pulled back, it made the sexiest gurgling sound. She took me in until I bumped the back of her throat and then slid back, over and over again. It was the most glorious feeling and yet also torture at the same time. I wanted so badly to lift my hips and push the rest of the way into her throat, but I didn't want to hurt her. After a few minutes, she released me and looked up. My hand still clutched her hair, and Stella covered it with hers and dug it in deeper.
Show me. Show me.
Fuck. She lowered her mouth again, and this time, after two slides down, I couldn't take it anymore. I did exactly what she asked for, and when she got to that point where it's sink or swim, that place at the back of her throat where she would start to pull back, I gently nudged her head down farther, and she opened her fucking throat, opened it wide and swallowed me all the way down.
Fuck.
She'd been able to do that all along and had waited for me to ask for it. Jesus Christ. She was already perfect, but now... Stella pulled back, her cheeks hollowing as she sucked me to the tip. She made a sweet hum of approval when I wrapped her hair snugly in my fist and pushed her head back down again. I only lasted two more sucks before my release was suddenly barreling down on me.
I'm going to come,
I groaned and loosened my grip on her hair, but she didn't stop.
Stella, sweetheart.
This time, I used the hair still loosely in my hand to pull her back a little, unsure how loud my voice was.
but that only caused her to take me in deeper. Fuck, she wants me to come down her throat. Stella didn't have to wait long. After one more suck, I let out a pulsing stream that never seemed to end. I actually started to get a little concerned about how long it lasted, but my sweet girl swallowed every drop. Even though she'd done all the hard work, my head lolled back on the pillow, and I was completely out of breath. Stella wiped her mouth and climbed up my body. She had the goofiest smile on her face. Jesus, that was... I feel like I might have to be taught to walk again. She giggled.
Does that mean your stress has been relieved?
It does, unless I think about how the hell you learned to do that.
Actually, funny enough, a woman in one of my diaries had been struggling to try to do it, so she bought an instructional video. I bought it too because I was curious.
I shut my eyes and chuckled. Those diaries. They're going to be the death of me, aren't they?
Epilogue. 8.5 months later.
Dear Diary, tonight Stella fell asleep before me, and I watched her. Every once in a while, there was a little twitch at the corner of her lip, and her mouth would curve upward. It didn't last long, a second or two, but I found it mesmerizing. I hope she was dreaming of me, because I want to make all of her dreams come true. Just like she's made mine. Hudson.
I clutched my new diary to my chest. Seriously? How did I get so lucky? Hudson and I had moved in together a few months after the public launch of Signature Scent. Not that I needed a roommate anymore. For the first time in my life, I could afford my own place in New York City. I could have plunked down a nice deposit on a brownstone of my own, as my business had done better than I could have imagined in my wildest dreams. Oprah had even put my little invention on her list of favorite gifts to give this year. We now had a special edition Valentine's Day signature scent box, and pretty soon a men's version would be ready to launch. I'd worked long days writing the new algorithms, but now the experienced staff at Rothschild Investments had taken over, and I finally felt like I'd found the work-life balance I'd always wanted. Hudson Rothschild had made all my dreams come true, and then some. He'd even surprised me with a trip to Greece to celebrate shipping our first product internationally. We'd stayed at the most amazing hotel in Mykonos. When we pulled up, it had looked vaguely familiar, but it took until I walked into our suite to realize why. The hotel he'd booked for us was the one I'd picked out almost a year ago while dream vacation planning in the lobby of his office and waiting to speak to him. He'd remembered from just the quick look he'd had at my screen. As for my diary reading hobby, well, I stopped buying them. I was afraid having journals laying around might remind Hudson of difficult memories. A few months back, he'd noticed and asked why I'd stopped. I'd told him I didn't need to read about other people's lives anymore because my love story topped anything anyone else could pen. I hadn't been lying, of course, but Hudson knew me well. He'd known I missed reading them, and probably knew the reason I'd given them up, which was why he'd surprised me with a diary last week, one he'd secretly kept for months. It was the sweetest, most romantic thing anyone had ever done for me. Well, most of the entries were sweet. Some were just dirty. Case in point, I flipped a dozen or so pages back and reread one of my favorites.
Dear Diary, today was a particularly hard day. Pun intentional, but damn if it isn't the truth. My girl has been out on the West Coast for almost a week now. This morning when I woke up, I'd been lying on her pillow. Inhaling her scent made my usual morning wood impossible to deflate on its own. Rather than fight it, I shut my eyes and pulled her pillow from beneath my head to cover my face. Taking deep breaths, I stroked my cock, imagining my tight fist was her beautiful pussy. There was no substitute for the real thing, but I imagined she was sitting on top of me, grinding down hard to take every last inch inside her. She'd throw her head back as she came close, her beautiful tits bouncing up and down and aching to have my mouth on them. I'd wait until after she came, and then thrust so deep that some of my cum would still be inside her the next time she had to leave. Hudson.
Another of my favorites was a few more pages back. It was a story he'd never told me, but it warmed my heart.
Dear Diary, today I took Charlie out to breakfast and told her Stella was moving in. After, we were walking home and passed a park. Inside were two little girls, maybe a year younger than her. They were jumping up and down with wide eyes and huge smiles plastered on their faces. I pointed to the girls and said, "What do you think they're so excited about?" Charlie's response was, "Maybe their daddy's girlfriend is moving in too." Hudson.
The man I was currently swooning over walked out to the backyard. I sat in a rocking chair on the deck next to the fire pit, with Hendrix at my feet. Hudson shook his head. "My faithful friend there seems to forget who his master is." I smiled. The sheepdog I'd bought Hudson for Christmas had become my shadow lately. I wasn't sure why, since all I seemed to do was yell at him for eating my shoes and furniture. He'd taken forever to house train, only to take up the lovely new habit of gnawing on $1,000 coffee table legs. To be honest, Hendrix was a pain in the ass for the most part. But seeing the look on Hudson's face on Christmas morning, when he realized he'd finally gotten the dog he'd wished for as a little boy, made all the chaos worth it. I now had a copy of the photo Olivia kept framed on her living room mantle on my own nightstand, the one with Hudson blowing out his birthday candles and making a wish for a sheepdog while covering her mouth. And yes, he'd named our dog after the gin that brought us together. "It's only because I'm the one who usually feeds him," I said. Hudson's eyes zoomed in on the book in my hands. "Remember our deal? You're only supposed to read one a day." "I know. I was just rereading some of my favorites. I still have my one for today to read." "Okay. I'm going to run to the store to pick up a bottle of wine for us to bring to Olivia's tonight. I'll take Hendrix to get his walk in. Anything else I should get while I'm out?" Today was Mason and Olivia's one-year wedding anniversary, so we were going over to their place for dinner. They'd just moved out of Manhattan and into a house a few blocks away. I wondered if Hudson realized it wasn't just their anniversary. It was ours, too. 1 year ago today, I'd sniffed some gin and met the love of my life. Though love wasn't exactly the feeling I'd had when I'd hopped into the cab to flee the scene that night. I'd gotten him a little gift to commemorate the anniversary of our meeting, and figured I'd give it to him later when we got home. "No, I don't think we need anything but wine. I baked a cake for dessert already." "All right. I'll be back in 20 minutes. "Okay. We can watch the sunset before we leave for Olivia's." Hudson started to walk into the house, but he stopped and turned back with a warning finger. "Remember, one entry. No reading ahead."
"I won't."
Hearing his footsteps fall away, I sighed and opened my diary back up. I only had another 20 or so pages left, and the next entry was so damn short. I could probably read the entire book before he got back, and he wouldn't even know. But instead, I'd savor the pages like he wanted me to. At least, that's what I planned. Until I actually read the next short entry.
Dear Diary, today I went shopping. I don't know much about jewelry, so I took my sister with me. She was a royal pain in the ass.
I smiled, imagining Hudson and Olivia shopping. His idea of shopping was walking into one store with the purpose of buying three suits and walking out within a half hour. Olivia, on the other hand, didn't as much shop as graze. She would set out to buy a pair of shoes to go with a dress and come home with a new dining room set, a coat for Mason, a toy for Charlie, and some electronic gadget for the office from the Sharper Image. The shoes she set out to buy would no longer be necessary because she'd also have a brand new dress. I'd actually been with her once when she'd gone to shop for shoes for one outfit and come home with a completely different ensemble, only to realize she still needed shoes for the new item she'd brought home. Olivia was the woman who walked out of a mall with 14 different shopping bags. Hudson was a man who requested they ship his suits to him when they were done being tailored, so he didn't have to return to the store. But as I went back to reading, I realized Hudson hadn't mentioned he'd gone shopping with his sister. He also hadn't come home with any new jewelry recently. So I curiously returned to my diary.
We went to 6 stores. Anything I liked, Olivia hated. Anything she liked, I nixed. After a full day, I went home empty-handed and aggravated. My beautiful girl came home about 10 minutes later, smelling like a forest. She'd been at the lab since early this morning working on her new signature scent for men. But she wrapped her arms around my neck, brushed those pouty lips with mine, and my shitty day evaporated. That's when I realized the problem with buying my love jewelry was that I hadn't found anything half as special as her. It took me 31 years to finally get it right, and I wasn't going to half-ass showing her what she meant to me. Hudson.
Oh my God. There was no way I could stop reading here. Hudson was shopping for jewelry that's special for me? Could it be? Looking over my shoulder, I glanced into the house. Everything was still. It would take Hudson at least 20 minutes to walk to the liquor store and back with the dog. I had to read a little more. One more entry, at least. Of course, one entry led to 2, and 2 led to 3, and suddenly I was on the last page. Hudson had gone on a half dozen shopping trips, written another vividly steamy entry about things he wanted to do to me, and penned a heartfelt few pages about the night my parents had come over for dinner. It had taken me a long time, but yes, my parents and I had finally seen each other in person. I'd had to work my way up to it, and I'd been a nervous wreck. But in the end, the evening had been pleasant. I hadn't yet rekindled my relationship with my sister, though I'd finally told Hudson the full story and admitted who Aiden had had an affair with. I remained hopeful that maybe someday I'd find a way to forgive Cecilia, too. From what I'd heard, she and my ex had since broken up, after she'd found him cheating with one of her friends. I probably should have felt good learning that, but I didn't. I felt bad for Cecilia, which is why it gave me hope that there was a chance for us after all. None of Hudson's entries specifically said what type of jewelry he was shopping for, but it was pretty obvious it was a ring. What other type of jewelry had to be so perfect and took so many shopping trips? My pulse raced as I read the final pages. Oh my God, he bought something. And he hid it where he'd hidden my Christmas present in our room last year. And he isn't planning on giving it to me until his birthday. Hudson's birthday wasn't for 2 more months. No way could I wait that long to find out. Hudson had no idea I'd stumbled upon his little hiding spot in the back of his closet last year. So I could... No, I really shouldn't. Blood swished through my ears and my hands started to sweat. Maybe I could just go see if it was a ring box? I didn't need to open it or anything. Imagine the anticipation that would build over the next couple of months. Now imagine what would happen when the big day finally came, if he handed me a square box with earrings? There would be no way in the world I could hide my disappointment after waiting months. It almost felt like I had to go look now. Whatever he was shopping for had taken him a damn long time. He'd feel awful if I burst into tears, unable to hide how let down I felt. So, in a sense, I would be doing it for him. Sure you are. I looked at my watch and glanced back over my shoulder into the house one more time. Maybe I should wait until a time when he was going to be gone longer. No. I shook my head, even though I was answering my own thoughts. I definitely couldn't wait. So I rushed into the house and ran directly to the front door. Opening it, I looked right and then left to make sure Hudson wasn't already coming down the block. Finding the coast clear, I hurried to the bedroom. The door was closed, and I was such a nervous wreck that I had to take a moment to steady myself. My hand trembled as I took a deep breath before turning the doorknob. But my heart stopped as I walked inside. Looking for something. Hudson raised a brow. He was sitting on the edge of our bed with Charlie on his knee, Hendrix laid at his feet. I blinked a few times. What are you doing here? I thought you'd left. He prompted his daughter to jump off his lap and stood. What am I doing here? I could ask you the same question. What are you doing in the bedroom right now, Stella? He walked over to where I stood, frozen. With a grin, he took my hand.
You didn't read ahead, did you?
My mind was so jumbled. When did he get back from the store? And where did Charlie come from? What the hell was going on? Though I didn't need to wait very long for the answer. Hudson held out his hand to his daughter. Charlie took it with an ear-to-ear smile. If I'd thought I was nervous before, it was nothing compared to how I felt as I watched the man I loved get down on one knee. He brought my trembling hand to his lips. Seeing a bit of nervousness on his face as he looked up actually helped calm me.
1 year ago today, I met a beautiful, smart woman, he began. When I've heard you tell the story of how we met, you say you crashed my sister's wedding. But the truth of the matter is, you crashed my heart. You're the kindest, warmest, strangest, most amazing person I've ever met.
I lifted my hands to cover my mouth, and happy tears filled my eyes as I laughed. The strangest? You make that sound like a good thing. Hudson smiled.
It is. And I love you because you're a little strange sometimes, not despite it. You've spent years reading everyone else's love stories, and tonight, you read the last chapter of mine.
He winked.
Even though you weren't supposed to. But my last chapter is only the beginning, sweetheart.
He looked over at Charlie, who pulled a little black box from behind her back and handed it to her father.
Stella Rose Bardot, let me give you your happily ever after. Be my wife, and I promise to try my hardest to make your life better than anything you've ever read in a book.
He opened the little black box, and inside was something I'd never seen before. The velvet-lined box contained two rings. On the right was a gorgeous emerald-cut diamond set in white gold with tiny baguettes going all the way around the band. On the left side was a tiny replica of the engagement ring. He took the first one out of the box and held it out to me.
I'm not just asking you to marry me. I'm asking you to be my family with Charlie. So I had yours made, and then a mini replica in cubic zirconia for her, my two ladies. What do you say, sweetheart? Be ours.
I looked over at Charlie. She had a giant smile on her face as she took something from behind her back and held it up. A banana with writing on it. Say yes, so we'll never split. As silly as it was, the banana did me in. The happy tears now streamed down my face. Wiping them, I mouthed, I love you, to Charlie before pressing my forehead to Hudson's. Yes, yes. My heart already belongs to you both, so this is the icing on the cake. After Hudson slipped the ring on my finger, we helped Charlie put on hers. The three of us held each other for a long time before my fiancé told her to go wash up to go to her aunt's house.
Finally, a minute alone.
Hudson cupped my cheeks and pulled my mouth to his.
Now kiss me properly.
As usual, he left me breathless. You know, between your diary and that proposal, I think you might be a true romantic at heart, Mr. Rothschild.
Oh, yeah? He smiled. I'll deny it if anyone asks.
I laughed. It's okay. I'll know the truth. Under that hard exterior is a big old softy.
Hudson took my hand and slid it down to his crotch. He cupped my fingers around a pretty damn steely erection. I got more hard exterior for you later.
I smiled. I can't wait. He brushed his lips with mine.
Did you like the diary?
I loved it. It was the best love story I've ever read. But my favorite part was the ending.
Hudson shook his head. That wasn't an ending, sweetheart. It was only our beginning. Because a true love story like ours never ends.
This has been The Invitation. Written by Vi Keeland. Narrated by Sebastian York and Andy Art. Copyright 2020 by Vi Keeland. Production coordination by Lyric Audiobooks. Producer Andy Art. Sebastian York and Andy Art are members of SAG-AFTRA. To keep up with new releases, visit vikeeland.com. This unabridged recording was produced in 2020 by Vi Keeland, who holds the copyright. Neither this recording nor any portion of it may be reproduced or used for any purpose without prior written authorization from Vi Keeland. Thank you.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.